This episode of Dare to Interrupt is brought to you by the Myrtle Beach Convention Center and the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau. Hello, everybody. This is Courtney Stanley, and welcome to another episode of Dare to Interrupt, the only podcast made by women for women in the world of events, hospitality, tourism, and beyond. We hope you feel empowered as you listen in on honest, unfiltered conversations with leaders who are considered to be the most influential, inspiring, and innovative women in business today. Throughout their careers, these leaders have dared to interrupt conversations, their own comfort zones, and sometimes even societal norms to hustle toward their greatest levels of success. Please welcome today's guest. Here with me, I have Maria Grosso, Senior Vice President of the Convention Division at the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome, Maria. How are you?
Hi, Courtney. I'm great. So thrilled to be here today.
I'm happy to have you here. And I know we were just talking about how busy things have been in Philadelphia. What is the most exciting event that you've been working on lately?
Oh my goodness. We're gearing up for quite an important time in Philadelphia, the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence signed in 2026. So we are full steam ahead. Preparing. Most of our work is done with solidifying the meetings and conventions that are coming in that year, along with the FIFA World Cup and Major League Baseball All-Star Game. But we still have some holes to fill and hotels to fill. So the work's not done yet, but we're well on our way.
That is amazing. And what an exciting time to have the FIFA World Cup there. That's incredible.
It really is. You know, I've been fortunate in my time here at the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau to work on so many great events, the DNC, the RNC. We had the NFL draft here in 2017. But this is different. The FIFA World Cup, I mean, it's the most watched sporting event in the world. And I think it will put Philadelphia on a global stage and like we've never been before. So it's really exciting.
And I have to say, I know the audience can't see what's in your background right now, but I have to say that I am loving the life-size The Rock Dwayne Johnson cutout that's happening behind you. You said that you just hosted WrestleMania as well.
We did. We haven't had it for 25 years, and it just ended two weeks ago now. And what an amazing event for the city. Over 100,000 people came through Philadelphia for 5 days. Two major events, and my team knows I love Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I offered to take care of him personally while he was here, but I wasn't needed. So they did get me this life-size cutout that I've been carrying around the office with me for the last few weeks.
That is hilarious. What is your favorite movie that stars The Rock?
Oh my gosh, that's hard. I like them all. I'm not a huge movie watcher, but okay. He just makes me laugh. And I mean, as the highest paid actor nowadays, I just can't not watch him. I just think he's great.
I have to say, I loved him in the Tooth Fairy movie.
I did not see that.
Oh my god! I mean, he you get to see him in a tutu, just kind of like prancing around. So it's a whole other side and style of The Rock, and it's just really fun.
All right, I wrote it down. Check it out on Netflix.
Perfect. So I have to ask, because I've spent some time in Philly, but I really haven't spent enough time to immerse myself in the culture of the city. I'm truly curious, how would you describe what differentiates Philadelphia from other cities?
I would say if you asked me to do it in one word, I would say it's a vibe. Ooh. I mean, Philly, it's just, Philly is, we're not even a hidden gem anymore. But, you know, when I'm selling the destination nationally, I think people think of Philadelphia as a very industrial city still. They don't know that we're a restaurant city, cultural mecca. I mean, it's just, the city offers everything. I'm just so impressed. You know, we've got 1.5 million people that live in Philadelphia. You probably wouldn't think that either. It's just a very vibrant downtown. And I think it surprises a lot of people. One of the most fun things in my job is when people come into Philadelphia and they say, I've never been here before. And then we get to showcase the city for with them for like 2 days and they leave like, wow. You know, you can just see it on their face. They're just shocked at what this destination can offer. So that's one of my most favorite things about Philadelphia. It's just a vibe.
I love that. I think that was such a cool way to wrap it up, to summarize the city. It's a vibe. Well, I'm going to try to make myself available for the World Cup and get down there because it's not that far from me. So we'll see.
Please do.
Yeah, we will see. Now, I know that you've worked at the Convention and Visitors Bureau for almost 25 years. What keeps it interesting? What do you love about it?
It's just the greatest job. I've always been in hospitality. I started in hotels back in 1986. And I loved that too. And then a job became available at the Convention Bureau in 1999. And I moved over here. And I think what's most important about this work that we do is we impact so many. When I first started here, I was just focused on my own sales efforts. I was, you know, I had a market that I had to represent Philadelphia in, and I had to bring conventions back here to Philadelphia. So it was very me by myself. Yep. I felt like, you know, kind of doing my job and doing my thing. But now, you know, being here for so long and moving into this role as the SVP, you know, it just gives you a different perspective of the work that we do here. And COVID really shined a critical light on the work that we do. You know, when this city shut down, as all cities did across the country, and there were no meetings or conventions, you really felt the impact with restaurants closing and hotels closing. And it was just the most horrible feeling ever. And, you know, people aren't at work, you know, housekeepers aren't working because we don't have visitors here, and restaurant staff aren't busy. And when you see how we came back, the city's just so resilient. It truly is like the Rocky story, you know, the true Rocky story, Philadelphia being such an underdog, but coming back and being on top, and we're back to our 2019 levels. The city's thriving again. And when we are able to do our jobs and fill the city with conventions, we put people to work. Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference in our community. Mm-hmm. So it's a great job.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I mean, what a time that was. I think it was such a difficult moment for the tourism industry, specifically the conventions industry specifically. Do you feel like a lot has changed within the CVB world since the pandemic? Have strategies changed? Have the way you do business changed? What's different now?
Yeah, everything really. Mm-hmm. We did, you had to, I don't want to use the word pivot anymore. I swear I wasn't going to use it, but you really, we did, right? I mean, we are funded through hotel tax. And when there's no hotel tax and no visitors, your funding goes away. So we had to find new revenue streams and look at doing business differently and tighten up our contracts to protect this destination when things happen like that. Or people just want to move and go to a different location. So we have changed a bunch of things as our industry has, but I can tell you, I think this industry came together quite well because we all had to adapt mm-hmm. as how we were doing business. And it's really a joint effort. One of the greatest things about this job is we work with so many different key people in this city and this destination to make everything work, right? We have our partners at the Pennsylvania Convention Center and our partners at Visit Philly and our hotel partners. And you need all of those things to work seamlessly together to provide the experience that these customers expect when they come to your destination. And we got through it together. And I'll tell you, it's been great. And we came out well on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely did. And I'm so happy to hear that the city is just thriving. Mm-hmm. And I know we talked about this a little bit before we hopped on here, but I see the same thing in Detroit. The city is, there's so much going on all the time. Tourism numbers are definitely up. The big events that the city's hosting are just incredible. They're mind blowing. And it's so amazing to see that story taking place now after such hardship that the industry in general was facing just a couple of years ago. Now, I do want to ask you a little bit about your career journey, because you've been in the industry for a while, for a long time. What do you feel like were some of the most influential factors in you earning the success that you have today? What really made a difference in your career?
Yeah, now Courtney, you just made me sound very old.
Oh gosh, definitely not. Definitely not.
I think, you know, I would probably, before I even got into the hospitality or got bit by that hospitality bug, I think maybe some of the most influential people for me were leaders that I had at a very young age. My third grade teacher played a big role in my life. She was just amazing and gave me such confidence. And I wasn't very bubbly in school. I couldn't sit still. So school was not like my favorite thing, but she made me enjoy going to school every day. And then I think equally as important was one of my coaches. And then the coaches became, you know, all of my coaches became very important. But I played soccer my whole life. And I still talk to some of those coaches and they've become mentors. You know, they're different. They're not business mentors, but they shape you and they provide you with character building skills. And, you know, some of those things that you might not learn right away in the office. So I feel like I've been touched by a bunch of different people in different areas of my life that I've been able to kind of grab onto something that I learned there and hold on to it. And then I think you go into the business world, you know, and there's, I think with women in particular, you know, mentorship is so vitally important, but it's so hard to find. You know, it's, we should have a matchmaking site. I want to have a matchmaking site for mentorship, where you connect people in your industry, someone that's willing to give and someone who's wanting to learn. I would love to see something that came together like that, like a dating site, but for mentorship. But I think it's so critical, and we as women need to not only find mentors early on in our career and don't be afraid to ask for help because you want to learn, but also equally as important is to kind of reach back and grab somebody that might need that same learning that you were able to take advantage of. So I've really been blessed with great mentors and leaders, and my family, of course. My dad was a great leader, and I think I learned so much from him, like tenacity and, you know, just work hard, good things will come. So at the end of the day, I think I've been surrounded by a bunch of really great people.
I love to hear that. And I do, before we dig a little bit deeper into mentorship, I do want to go back for a second and ask you about your third grade teacher, because I've never heard anybody say that before, but you ask, you know, what helped shape your career, blah, blah, blah. And you went to your third grade teacher. I mean, clearly that person made such an impact on you. So what was that impact? What was that experience like for you?
She was so, Mrs. Armbruster was her name, and she was just so amazing. And she just had there was something about her. I was drawn to her. I don't know if I could really put it into words, but she made me feel like I was, you know, she knew I didn't really like to be in class because I could hardly sit still. And I probably didn't diagnose it when I was young in school, but I probably had like ADD or something like that. But, you know, she found a way to help me learn. I got straight A's that year. Never had them again. But if they're maybe that's why she was my favorite teacher. But she saw something in me. And I think she knew well enough to kind of water that seed and help me grow. So that's what I remember about her. And I would write her for years later. She's no longer with us, but I would write her and just say, hey, I was just thinking of you. I was in 11th grade at that time, but just wanted to remind her the impact she made on my life.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Do you feel like her ability to not just see your potential, but also bring out the best in you, do you feel like that's something that you are also skilled in as a leader and as a mentor? That's something that's important to you, to really look for those people that you think just need a little bit of support or just a different approach in general?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I think it's really difficult to manage people nowadays, right? They're not always in front of you. It could be over Zoom. People are working remote, so you don't have that immediate connection. That you would have in a peer-to-peer sitting at a lunch table relationship. But I do think I work really hard at trying to see everyone's uniqueness and meeting people where they are. And it could be in that day or in that month. and trying to grab onto that. And I'm reading Adam Grant's book right now, Hidden Talents. And it's really all about that. It's like Hidden Potential, it's called, excuse me. It's really finding that little thing that makes that person tick and finding a way to make that great in them.
I love Adam Grant. Oh, he's so cordial.
He's amazing. He's a Philly guy. He's right here at Wharton School of Business. Yes, he is.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. He's absolutely fantastic. I find that the research that he does and the knowledge that he shares around leadership and management and just employment in general is so valuable. Incredibly valuable. Yeah. That's interesting though. Something that you said around it being maybe a difficult time to manage people. I would love to just hear a little bit more about that.
I think, you know, as managers now, it's not, you know, I run a sales division, so we're very number centric and goal driven. But it's jobs are, it's different today. It's different. We have to, you know, people have gone through a lot, you know, and you have to really figure out where they are, to make them tick. And I think you've got to be keenly aware of the issues that are surrounding us and mental health issues and overworked issues and at home issues, you know, whatever they are, you just have to manage differently today than you did years ago. You have to manage the whole employee, I think, and not just what the task is in front of them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, we've seen studies that have shown and discussed the importance of people having that type of environment that where they do feel cared for, they feel valued, and they feel heard. So I think it's, you know, I think it's great to hear that you as a leader in your organization recognize the need to see that person as a whole person and not just the person that's coming in from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday or working crazy hours on the weekends for events or whatever, you know, the moment calls for. But I think that's really great to hear. And actually, I want to dig in a little bit more into that, you know, work-life balance conversation. I know that when we spoke prior to today, you mentioned that you are a caregiver for your mom. What has that experience been like for you?
Yeah. I think, you know, I think just in general, women, we deal with so much, right? I'm not a mother, but a lot of people that work for me and with me and friends of mine, you know, they care for their children and they still go do their full-time job. I think there's the parents aging, living longer and aging, and that we're left to care for them. Plus everything else in life, you know. But I could tell you this, because I don't have children, I think I'm probably handling it a little bit better than if I had, you know, a fuller plate than I already do. But my mom has Alzheimer's and she's lived with us for just about 17 years, but she's only been experiencing Alzheimer's for like the last 2 or 3 years has come on. So, you know, she can't remember very much of anything on the day to day, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I think it's helped me prioritize things in my life. And maybe I needed that, right? Because I am the kind of person that will just work. I do charity work. I do my regular job. And again, maybe because I have a little bit more time on my hands, but I think she's helped me realize what's important in life. And it's okay to say no to things. And it's also helped me remove some drama from my life that I didn't need in my life, because it's not what it put things in a different perspective, and I look through things with a different lens now. So I think that's what it's forced me to do, and it's been a blessing in that respect. But as far as mom, she's happy as can be. She laughs all the time. We have a wonderful life. So like I said, I wouldn't trade it, but it certainly impacts all of your decisions that you make at your work life and at your personal life. You know, life. And when you say work-life balance, like I always kind of get like this little giggle when you say work-life balance, because I'm like, is there really such a thing?
No.
But I do try to find that balance, whatever that is for me. However, and I think that's probably a very personal thing, the work-life balance, because what looks like, you know, it works for me might not work for you. But I'm feeling good about where I am today with mom and my job and everything else.
Oh, she's very lucky to have you, you know, and likewise, I'm sure, like you've said, her experience with Alzheimer's and your experience as a caregiver has given you a different perspective on things. Yeah. And I think that's really, I think it a lot of times takes those moments and those shifts and those challenges that maybe come out of left field for us to take a step back and reevaluate and also just be forced in some ways to prioritize differently.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned you do some charity work too. I would love to hear more about that.
I do. I lost my dad to colon cancer. It's about 19 years now. And I lost my grandfather on my maternal grandfather, my mom's dad, also to colon cancer years prior to that. So we have colon cancer on both sides of the family. And honestly, I really didn't know too much about colon cancer before my dad passed of it. But he only lived 10 months with the disease and he was 67 years old. So that's very young nowadays. And I was so angry. I was really just in a very dark place because like, why me? Why take the best dad out there? You know, that kind of thing. And I needed to do something. I was looking in Philadelphia in the tri-state area for some colon cancer type of work. And there wasn't really anything out there. And it's the second leading killer of cancer-related death. So I thought I should easily be able to find something to throw myself into. And I found this colon cancer challenge race in New York. And I went up there and did 4-mile run and I raised the most money. So they did a hospital tour for me. And I really got excited about I can do this. Mm-hmm. So I, of course, the two friends, they're like, oh my gosh, you do not need another thing on your plate. I'm like, no, I'm going to do this. So the next year I started a run in Philadelphia called Get Your Rearing Gear Philadelphia.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So to date, we just had our 15th year and we've raised a little over $3 million for colon cancer, mostly around research and patient care. But it was my way of finding a way through that sadness to help people in my own community that might be afraid to get a colonoscopy, or socioeconomic barriers, you know, all of those things that stand in the way of people getting a screening that they should have access to, that we can help them gain access to, or pick them up if they have transportation issues, or pay for their prep if they can't afford it. Or so it's really rewarding work. And it's just one of my passion projects that I just probably will keep doing until I'm no longer here.
That's incredible. And I'm a firm believer in the opportunity to turn pain into purpose. And that's exactly what this sounds like. You know, you took something that was really difficult and you made it into an opportunity, not just to immerse yourself and educate yourself about colon cancer, but to also create a community and do things to support that community and their families too. So I really admire that a lot.
Thank you.
I have to say throughout this conversation, I just feel like you're a lovely person. I'm like listening to everything you're saying. I'm hearing, you know, about the third grade teacher. I'm listening to your leadership style, you know, hearing some of these personal things from your own life that you're sharing. What do you hope you're remembered for? What do you want your legacy to be?
I think that I genuinely care whether it's something I do in charity work or if you're my friend, family, or, you know, my work life, that I care and I'll give 150% effort to whatever I kind of have in front of me, whether it's you or, you know, my job. But I just feel very blessed. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I need to give it back.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, that's a sign of a great leader. That's for sure. I want to ask you just one final question as we wrap up our conversation today. We've got a lot of people tuning in to these conversations and they're tuning in hopes to learn from you and be inspired by you. What do you want to leave them with? What words of wisdom, any final pieces of advice as they're advancing in their lives and in their careers?
Someone said to me once, they said, exceed your own expectations and don't worry about anybody else's. And it was such great advice when you think about it, you know, just quiet the noise around you and look in yourself and look at what you want to achieve and your goals in front of you and just go for it. So I think quieting the noise is probably really difficult for many. It was for me. But I think if you can put your eye on the prize and just look at all the support that you have around you and put your head down and grind it out, that you can do it.
Yeah, I love that. I appreciate that. And actually, when I had prepared our outro for today, I had written Quiet the Noise. So that's really interesting that you just brought that full circle here today. Oh, this was so great. Thank you so much, Maria. Honestly, just hearing and learning more about you, for sharing your story with us today. This was a real pleasure.
Courtney, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely, our pleasure. And audience, of course, thank you all for listening. Share what you took away from this episode with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by following at Meetings Today and at Courtney on Stage. And be sure to never miss an episode by subscribing to Dare to Interrupt on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and more. Be tenacious, quiet the noise, and keep daring to interrupt, my friends. Until next time.